Blog Talk Radio.
Talk with Vince. It must mean it's time to talk about movies with me, with Vince. That's me. How you doing? It is Friday night. It is 11 o'clock. It is time to talk about the movies. This week, I'm going to talk about a couple of movies, or maybe some more. I just came back home from seeing Creed 2. I'm going to give you my impression of that movie. Not my review. I'm just going to give you my impression of it. Because the review is based in my way of saying you should or should not see the movie. Well, your opinion is just as valid, if not more, than mine. So you may not agree with me. I'm just going to tell you how I felt about it. And then you can say, oh, I think I'll go see that. Or not. Either way, you should definitely go see it. Just to make up your own mind. Anyway, I'm also going to talk a little bit about Shock Treatment. What the hell was Shock Treatment? Not the song by the Ramones or the medical procedure, which you probably shouldn't do unless you really need it. I'm talking about the movie, the musical written by Richard O'Brien, the guy who gave us the Rocky Horror Picture Show. I just saw that last weekend, too, in the theaters with a live audience doing the film in front of it. I'll tell you all about that, too, this week on Movie Talk. At the Movies with Vince, or Movie Talk with Vince, whatever the hell I call my show. And also, just a couple of heads up, if you'd like to call in and talk about Creed 3, maybe you just came back from seeing it too, or you're looking forward to seeing it, or whatever, give me a call. 914-205-5404. Once again, 914-205-5404. Give me a call. Join in the talk. Let me know what you thought about Creed 3. Or about Shock Treatment or Rocky Horror or whatever. All righty. So let's get this show off the road. All right, so a little bit of music there from the movie Rocky. So now here's my first impression of Creed 3. Number one, I enjoyed it. I thought that the story moved at a perfect pace. It was excessively well acted, in my opinion, and the story was really good. And the newcomers in this film, who I hadn't seen before, all did a great job. And I have to give, and I doff my hat to Michael B. Jordan. I thought not only as the lead of Creed, or lead of Creed, is that it sounds like the name of an album by the band Creed. Anyway, as the lead of the film, he also was the director. And Sylvester Stallone took a step back and acted simply as a producer, just making sure, I guess, the film got made. And I don't think he really oversaw anything else. Basically, everybody said, are we okay with this? And he was like, yeah, that looks good to me. So there you go. So he produced the film, but that's really the only input that he had into it. He didn't write the story. He didn't direct it. Michael B. Jordan did. And I thought it was all the better for it, not to put Stallone down. But I'll explain what I mean by that. For the most part, the film does have some cameos in it. I will say that, but I'm not going to tell you who or whatever. But I will say that the cameos in the film were never at once felt like they were just like a novelty thing. Like, oh, we're going to throw in a character here from the other movies because fans want to see them or whatever. There was a movie that came out years ago, the sequel to Wall Street, called Wall Street Money Never Sleeps, which I enjoyed. I actually thought it was a decent movie, but my big problem with Wall Street Money Never Sleeps was that they decided that this new story was not going to focus on one of the main characters from the original film, the character Charlie Sheen plays. Well, for no real reason whatsoever, our main character in that film runs into Charlie Sheen's character at a party, and the scene doesn't add anything to the story. It's like thrown in just to kind of say, oh, remember Charlie's character? Oh, you're probably wondering whatever happened to him. Okay, here it is. And now we're moving on. It just took you right out of the movie. It's like, oh, look, there he is. And there he goes, and they never talked about him ever again. He's never mentioned before that scene. He's never mentioned after. Well, that doesn't happen with Creed 3. I will say, I'm not going to tell you who comes back, but I will say that the characters that do come back and have small roles are important to the story. It actually makes sense that you'd be like, okay, yes, I would expect that person to be there. And I would expect that person to be in this scene. So for me, I thought that was one of the great things about 3-3 was that Michael B. Jordan did that. Also, one of the things I liked about it is that Stallone obviously agreed with the writers that the biggest problems with Creed and Creed 2, if there were any problems with them at all, which I would say they really weren't, they're pretty great movies. But the one thing about them was that they really weren't Creed movies. They were Rocky and Creed movies, so if that makes any sense. What I mean by the fact is Rocky played a major role in both of those two films. So in many ways, Creed and Creed 2 both feel like sequels to the Rocky films. Creed 1 definitely feels like a sequel to the last Rocky movie, Balboa. But you find out what happened to Rocky. Picks up right pretty much from the end of a couple of years later. Paulie has died. Spoiler alert. And then it picks up the story from there and then introduces us to a new character who becomes the main focal point of the film. But Rocky's still there as like a shadow over the entire movie. And he's in almost every scene. So he is pretty much not necessarily the lead, but he's kind of like the co-lead. He's the co-star of the film. So it makes the movie feel less like it's a Creed movie and more like a Rocky, which would have been, I guess, 7. Yeah, it would have been, it's really Rocky 7, in Rocky Part 7, Creed. You know what I mean? I hope you do. That's what I'm trying to say. Anyway, and then Creed 2 felt very much like they continued that on. Again, there's nothing wrong with that. The stories, in many ways, I felt that Rocky did need to be in Creed and in Creed 2 because you needed that continuity. But the films weren't almost mistitled. They should have been. They really were Rocky movies about a new character. And Creed 2 very much is a sequel to Rocky 4. It is a complete sequel to Rocky 4. It does function, shall we say, as a sequel to Creed, yes. But it brings in the characters from Rocky 4 so much that it's more that if you didn't see the Rocky movies and you were just focusing on the Creed movies, you'd be completely confused. Like, who is this character? So you have to go back and watch Rocky IV to understand it and understand why the Drago characters were so important. Whereas the story of Creed II, for those of you who haven't seen it, I'll tell you, focuses on the fact that Ivan Drago, who killed Apollo Creed in Rocky IV, in a boxing match. So he fought him. Drago killed him, and so Rocky then had to fight Drago, and he defeats Drago. Spoiler alert for a movie that's about almost 50 years old, 40 years old. And it's an old movie. So if you haven't seen Rocky IV yet, sorry, I just ruined the ending for you. Sorry. What can I do? Anyway, back to Creed II. So with Creed II, so they bring those characters back in, and it does make sense that Adonis Creed would want to fight the son of the man who killed his father. He's not going to want to fight the man who actually killed his dad. That guy's, the guy was old. He was in his 60s by that point, or probably older. I'm not exactly sure how old Ivan Drago is supposed to be in that film, but he's, too old. So, yes, he'd want to fight the son of the man who killed his dad. And, of course, Rocky wants to kind of put to bed his guilt over letting the fight go on in the first place and not training Apollo well enough so that Apollo didn't get his butt killed in the ring. And also Drago wants to have his own revenge for having lost the bout in the first place, or the second place, or whatever place, that place. Anyway, three, the first one where there is no Rocky. Spoiler alert, if anyone's going to this film expecting to see Sylvester Stallone show up, I'll just warn you ahead of time, he doesn't. He's not in the movie at all. There's no cameo or nothing. And I think it's good that people going into this film know that, so that you're not, waiting for something to happen and you're disappointed. This way you go into it, there's no Rocky, so don't worry about it. Just focus on the movie itself. And like I said, I loved it. Don't know what you'll feel about it, but I personally loved it. And I'll also say this. The audience at the end of this film applauded. So that says anything at all, there you go. The audience that I went to was a packed house for the most part, a couple empty seats, but for the most part the theater is pretty packed. And at the end of the film, at certain points during the boxing fights, spoiler alert, there's boxing in this movie, in the boxing matches, the audience was like, ooh, ooh, they were right there with them. Very much the way Stallone had audiences with him in the Rocky films. Michael B. Jordan did did a great job of choreographing and directing the boxing scenes in this film. And so at the end of the movie, you don't know where it's going, and I'm not going to tell you how the movie ends, but at the end of it, I will admit, I was kind of going, ooh, is this going to be like Rocky where he loses, or is this going to be like the other Rocky movies where he wins? You don't know. And that's one thing that I also love about the Rocky movies, is because they established right from the very beginning in the first film where Rocky loses, and then in other films you see him lose again and again and again, but he does end up winning where he needs to, then you never actually know, ooh, is he going to win in this one? Is he going to lose? It's not spelled out for you from the very beginning. So other, you may disagree. If you go into the movie, you go, I can see this ending coming a mile away. But either way, whether you can or cannot, I don't think it really matters. The movie actually worked really well for me. So my impression of it, it was a great movie. And I can't wait to add it to my Rocky collection, which does not include Rocky V, which I probably should get just as completist, but it's really not that good of a movie. Rocky V, I will say, it's not as bad as people remember it, but it was definitely the weakest of all the films, mostly because the story just, the story was Rocky was now a trainer, which is great for Creed, but not so good with the Rocky story. And he does it, and when he ends up getting into his final fight at the end of the movie, it's a street brawl, and that's what Rocky was about. He's not a street fighter, he's a boxer. So there's that. So Creed III, my reaction, loved it. Definitely go check it out and see what you think. Would I love to see Michael B. Jordan get some nominations next year at the Academy Awards? Definitely. And I also like to see some of the other actors in it. Felicia Rashad does a great job. Her part's, spoiler alert, Felicia Rashad is in it. Her part isn't as big. Well, it's probably about the same size as the other films. She's not a focal character, or at least not as much as she was in the first one. But her part is very good, and she does a great job. And she's a great actress. I love her. So, and everybody else is great in the movie, too. I would say there's not a single actor in the movie that I went, couldn't they get someone better? It's like, no. All the characters, the villains, everybody else, everybody in the movie were, I thought, top-notch. And I would love to see everybody get a nomination in some way, shape, or form down the road. But who knows? All right, so that's my impressions of Creed. I hope you liked it. So now let's move to the 1980s with a film called Shock. Okay, so what was Shock Treatment? So first of all, let me give you a brief history of what this film was, and then I'll tell you what it was that I actually saw. So back around 1980-ish, Rocky Horror had become the most successful bomb in movie history. It was a movie that came out in 1975, bombed, but managed to stay in theaters to this very day. They still show it. In fact, they're showing it in Red Bank. It still gets shown in theaters all over the world, and especially in the United States and in London, because people discovered that they loved the message of this movie. Don't dream it, be it. In other words, if you're a freak, don't be afraid of being a freak. You know, if you're being made fun of or you're whatever, don't be afraid of it. Embrace, let your freak flag fly, as they said in the 60s. You know, because there's a place for everybody, anywhere. You like wearing women's clothing and you're a dude? Hey, there's a place for you for that. You like doing this? Hey, there's a place for you for that. And Rocky Horror let everybody know that no matter what you, what your belief is, as long as it's not, you know, something, you know, illegal, then embrace it, be it, because there's other people around who probably like doing that same thing too. And I always loved Rocky Horror because I always felt like a dweeb, a geek or whatever when I was a kid, because I loved Star Wars or whatever. I wasn't always necessarily the coolest kid, certainly wasn't the tallest, it was not necessarily the shortest, but pretty close. And maybe not the ugliest kid around or whatever, but I always kind of felt like I wasn't part of the cool crowd. Rocky Horror said, you know what? There is a cool crowd for you. We're that cool crowd. You don't feel cool? Well, come join us. We'll make you feel cool. And that's one of the reasons why I always loved Rocky Horror. Anyway, so after a few years, after it built and in the midnight circuit, being shown on weekends mostly at midnight, and just, you know, bringing crowd after crowd after crowd, the producers went, oh, wow, we made a bomb that is actually still showing and is getting, and is still bringing in huge numbers and crowds, you know, wherever it plays. so maybe we should do a new one. So they approached Richard O'Brien, the writer of the first film, who played Riff Raff in the film, and he said, well, I don't really want to make a sequel, because for him, there was nowhere for the story to go. Plus, and even beyond that, there was nothing else for him to tell. He told everything in that film. You know, the film was a parody of 50s sci-fi movies with 70s sexuality in it, but he did all that. So what was he going to do with Rocky Horror 2? Just all Rocky Horror 2 would have been is Rocky Horror yet again. Like, I already did that. Why do it again? But for him, he was like, I'm going to do another one. I want to do something completely different. Well, he had an idea for a movie that had nothing to do with Rocky Horror that involved the world being turned into a giant TV studio, or at least towns. So everybody lived their life on TV, which, of course, was ahead of its time, considering the fact that we do that now. People like the Kardashians live their lives on TV. So many other people, you know, live their lives. If it didn't happen on TV, it didn't happen. So they need to have all their lives broadcast throughout the world. And Richard O'Brien predicted that with this film, Shock Treatment. That was at least his original draft. I forget what the original story was called, but that was his original draft. But the studio said, well, okay, but can you tie it into Rocky Horror at all? I was like, well, I guess I could if I make the main characters Brad and Janet. They're like, great, do that. So he reaches out to most of the cast of the original Rocky Horror Picture Show. Half of them agree to return. The ones that don't include Peter Hinwood, who played Rocky Horror himself. He basically didn't enjoy being an actor and just dropped out. Tim Curry was too busy doing other things, although I'm sure he would have returned if he could have. Susan Sarandon was also too busy, but she loved doing Rocky Horror, so if she could have returned, I'm sure she probably would have. But her paycheck by that point was way too high. So they were like, can we not contact Susan? They're like, okay, it's not. Barry Bostwick also couldn't return. I think he was just too busy, but he also has nothing bad to say about Rocky Horror. Meatloaf was too busy. Actually, at that point, his career was kind of in a lull. So I'm actually not sure exactly what he was doing, except the fact that he's probably not doing much of anything. So I don't know, but he didn't return. And the actor who played Dr. Scott also didn't return, but everybody else pretty much does. And the actor who played Ralph Hapshot, who has a very small role in Rocky Horror. Matter of fact, he only has a few lines before one song. He returns as the character Ralph Hapshot. Everybody else from the original film returns as different characters. And Brad and Janet are now played by different actors. And the story basically revolves around, as I said, the town of now Denton, which is where Brad and Janet came from in the first film, is now a TV studio where everybody in the town lives in the studio. They sleep in the audience. They live in the audience. They never leave their seats. After the beginning of the movie, during its overture, we see the audience all, you know, piling in, and they're all the townspeople. And then everybody else works on the studio, and it's run by this guy named Farley Flavors, who has some kind of connection to Brad Majors, but we don't know what it is. Although, in fact, he's played by the same actor who plays Brad. You kind of get it right away. It's like, oh, I think they're probably the same person or a clone or a brother or something. For my money, I always loved Shock Treatment. I remember first discovering the film back in the 80s after I was really getting into Rocky Horror, and I learned that, oh, there's another one. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was either because I was working at a video store and we had the movie to rent, or somewhere where I read that, oh, that there's another one. So we rented it, my friends and I, and we just absolutely loved it. We were like, oh, my God, because in many ways, we thought it was better than Rocky Horror because it was so different. But it was also also the music was different. It was more rocking. The story made a little bit more sense. It seemed to have more to say, shall we say. It was more of an artistic piece than it was, what Rocky Horror was. It was just basically very different. It was a very, very, very different movie. The only thing it had in common was the actors, four characters, only one played by the original actor. And who wrote it and directed it and everything else. So it was basically everyone behind the scenes was the same. Many of the actors were the same. Some of them were, there was, like I said, there were some new faces. But for me, it felt more like a David Byrne film. Because this is before David Byrne of the Talking Heads made his own film, True Stories. But it felt Richard Byrne had made a movie again, David Byrne. This is what it would be like. Because it's very surreal. It's not set in a real world. It's kind of an allegory, shall we say? Very much an allegory, a satire. But it was a lot of fun. And I remember loving the soundtrack and thinking that Richard O'Brien did a better job writing. He thought he wrote better songs for this one than he did with the other one. And I think also because the other one was kind of more of a 70s version of 50 songs, whereas this was more songs that felt like today because they were written to be 80 songs, maybe even a little bit more futuristic. But so one didn't have so much of a 50s feel to it, a little bit, but not as much. It felt more like 80 songs, so it felt more modern to me. And I just loved it. Well, so now, flash forward to a week ago. Well, more like a month ago or so. My friend who I saw Shock Treatment with on TV many, many times, and we've since bought the DVDs when they came out, and he had the soundtrack to the movie. I don't to this day. I still need to find it and get it. But so he loved it, and he calls me up and says, "Hey, Vin, guess what I found? What? They're going to be playing Shock Treatment by you." "Really?" "So yeah, let's go get tickets." So we got tickets. He and his wife drove up to town. We spent the night, hanging out, doing, fun stuff that we hadn't done in years, and then went to go see Shock Treatment. Now, what they did was basically it's the same group who usually do Rocky Horror here, and what they do is they show the movie, but they act it out in front of the movie. So as the movie's playing, they have actors redoing the dialogue and acting out the movie and kind of making fun of it while the audience, us, yells stuff out to the screen or throw stuff, and movie theater doesn't like you when you throw stuff anymore because the theater gets kind of messy and it's a lot of cleanup. So they didn't have us throwing anything, but we do shout out at the audience. Whenever Brad comes on stage, you call him an asshole. Whenever Janet comes on screen, you call her a slut. And when this happens or that happens, you yell at the screen. So people are constantly yelling while we have actors trying to act out the movie in front of them and kind of making fun of the movie, but at the same time, in a loving way, because everybody in the theater are there because they love this movie. And Shock Treatment was done by those people. And they said, "You know what? We never did Richard's other movie. Let's do that." And so they went all out. We were quite impressed by this. This group called Friday Night Lights or whatever, what they did was they dressed up in costumes. They made costumes that look exactly like the ones in the movie. They did a great job of that. They changed genders around. They had people playing the characters, but not always the gender of the actor on screen. So sometimes a woman might play it, a part that's actually a man on screen, but it didn't matter. It was actually part of the fun that anybody could play these parts. They didn't, and the actors who played them didn't necessarily always look like them. Like Patricia Quinn in the movie Shock Treatment is a very sexy, thin woman, and the woman who played that character in the thing was heavy. And it didn't matter. None of us cared. That was actually part of the fun of it, was the fact that these people didn't match them perfectly, but they were playing the parts because they just loved that part. So it didn't matter if you looked like the part or not, if you were the right gender or not. Not like modern day where everybody has to say, "Oh, my God, this person played a gay person on screen, but yet they're not really gay. How dare they?" No, the Shock Treatment cast didn't care, but they were like, "No, I want to play the part of whomever." And they're like, "Okay, you're playing it." Didn't matter if they looked like him or not, if they were the right race, the right gender, the right whatever. And it was just so much fun. And they also had props. They had set pieces. They did everything to make it look as if they were doing a play, a production of the play Shock Treatment, which doesn't even exist. The Shock Treatment was written to be a movie. It wasn't based on anything. It was an original screenplay. So they did a hell of a job. Some people knew what to say out loud. I don't know where they got. There's probably people who are planted in the audience from the group to yell out things because I've never seen this movie on the big screen. So there was never any opportunity to learn what you should say when Brad says this or Janet does that or McKinley does this or the other McKinley does that. So it was just a hell of a lot of fun, I have to say. So my impression of that was kudos to the group who did that here in Red Bank, New Jersey. But they did a hell of a job. I applaud you guys. Clap, 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 clap. They did all amazing. They're props. And I even said this to them when we were, because as we were waiting to be let into the theater as they were getting it ready, the cast were all mingling around with us, all in their full costume. One of the actors, who I think probably regularly plays Frankenfurter when they do Rocky Horror, this time around he was playing the character that Riff Raff, or Richard O'Brien, plays in Shock Treatment, who's completely bald. Mostly because by that point, Richard O'Brien was completely bald. But this guy actually really has hair, so he had to put a bald cap on, big thick glasses. He had the costume exactly as Richard O'Brien wore in the movie. And I was looking at it going, like, oh, we had to make them. I was like, oh, my God, you guys did a hell of a job. They had the right logos on them. When it had to say DTV for Denton Television, they had it. Everybody pretty much looked the part. Again, not everybody did a hell of a – were meant to look exactly like him. Like the actor who plays the character of Farley Flavors in the movie, I forget the actor's name, who played him in the movie, but he's clean-shaven. The guy who did it in our group had a mustache, but he didn't bother to shave his mustache. He was like Cesar Romero in the classic Batman TV show in the 60s, who said, I'm not shaving my mustache to play the Joker. So he just painted over it with white makeup, and you can see it. Whenever you watch the show, it's like, he has a mustache, but it's painted over. All right, whatever. So I guess we're supposed to assume that the Joker has a mustache, but it was bleached white with his skin or whatnot. I'm not sure. But anyway, so the actor who did Farley Flavors has a mustache, despite the fact that the actor in the movie does not. Like I said, some of the actors were the wrong gender. But again, that's what made it more fun. It was such a great experience. My friends and I, we were like, oh, that was a great way to start our weekend. It was on a Saturday night. It was kind of right in the middle of the weekend. But we had a great time. So, again, kudos to those guys. So anybody out there who goes, well, if they ever do it again, go check them out. Or if you see any other people going to do it somewhere, go check it out. Or if you just want to see the movie, it's available on DVD or on streaming services, wherever streaming services are sold or delivered or whatever. And it's a hell of a lot of fun. And like I said, as you heard in the beginning there, a little bit of the Shock Treatment song. Here, I'll play a little more of it again. The music is different from Rocky Horror. Rocky Horror has a lot of guitar and it's got Meatloaf, but it has a very 50s feel to it. The Shock Treatment soundtrack has a very 80s feel to it, but at the time, that was a modern sound. It has a little bit of a 50s feel, but not as much. And Richard O'Brien and the cast do a hell of a job. And some of the songs actually even felt to me most like a couple of songs sound a little bit like a Springsteen feel to it or this feel to it. Oh, it sounds like my voice is starting to go, so I'm going to have to wrap up the show soon before I start going, start losing my voice altogether. Anyway, how's that? Better? Better. Anyway, so let's get a little bit of Shock Troop going. So here, check some of this out. That's a little taste of what you will be hearing if you go see Shock Treatment, which was a lot of fun. So if you do, go check it out on DVD and see what you feel. Like I said, it was very much ahead of its time. They did stuff in it that Richard O'Brien predicted the 21st century with our need to see everything on TV and have to live our lives on TV. And it's a very interesting story. And one of the things I also love too about too, again, spoiler alert, I'll give away a little bit of the ending, but not really. One of the things that my friends and I discussed was that we never really noticed that everybody wins in that film. It's one of the weird movies where the villain wins. They go off and the villain thinks, like, yay, I won. And our hero, and they think that they've defeated the heroes, but the heroes go off in their direction and they escape and they've won. So this, it's a movie where nobody loses. So I wonder what Richard was trying to say with that. But anyway, it's another thing, too, that I love about a lot of movies that aren't just cookie cutter fed to you. Some of my favorite movies are ones where that make you think at the end of it, and they go, oh, I wonder what he's trying to say by that. Oh, I didn't notice that. And Shock Treatment is much more than Rocky Horror, is that type of movie. Anyway, so here we are with my last 30 seconds. I'm going to wrap things up as before I lose my voice. And tell everybody, go check out Shock Treatment. Go check out Creed. Let me know what you think. All right. Have a good night, everybody. This has been Movie Talk. This has been Vince talking about movies. And I'll talk to you next week. See what's coming out, and we'll have fun then. Take care.